Tribune Radio is on the air. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. On this edition of PTR, we look at the roots of racism with our guests, Nelson Peary and Brooke Hagerty.
Racism isn't something that that exists by itself. Racism has a face to it, and that face is exploitation. Racism facilitates this, right? Facilitates exploitation and facilitates the conquest of weaker peoples and so forth. If we look at the world today, the first thing that we're struck with and can't avoid is that you have the Northern Hemisphere that is white, that is industrialized, that is militarily powerful, and they have conquered the Southern Hemisphere, which in the main is colored, which is economically backward, and the shield for all this, the excuse for all of this, is racism. But you cannot extract racism away from the poverty, the conquest, and the exploitation.
Well, we're not going to be able to end racism, or any other social ill for that matter, without changing the conditions that give rise to it. Just as Nelson was saying before, we can see from history that the idea of race, or the ideology of race, really arose as part of the capitalist system and helped to sustain it. It ensured economic exploitation that guaranteed profits and the political oppression that has allowed for those profits to be guaranteed. We have to be against racism, there's no doubt about that, but being against something isn't enough. We have to be for something.
People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, who also publish the newspaper, People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. Stay tuned for contact and ordering information at the end of the program. It's been a trying time for the United States and for the world in the aftermath of terrorist attacks which took place in the U.S. on September 11th. Just a short time prior to the day that four hijacked airplanes crashed in the United States, the world's eyes were focused on Durban, South Africa, and the World Conference on Racism. On today's People's Tribune Radio, we try and take a look at the roots of racism with our guests, Nelson Peary and Brooke Hagerty. They were interviewed by PTR correspondent Sandy Reed in Chicago, Illinois.
This is Sandy Reed from People's Tribune Radio. We're very honored today to have with us Brooke Hagerty and Nelson Peary, who are co-authors of the book Moving Onward from Racial Division to Class Unity. We wanted to talk a little bit today about the world situation, the struggle against racism, and the vision of a new world. Nelson, you have participated in the struggle for a new world for over 60 years. You're the author of Black Fire, The Making of American Revolutionary. Could you tell us why there is so much violence in the world today?
Well, I imagine that we could start off saying that violence arises from hatred and fear. And there's an old saying that you hate what you fear. So I think a good place to start in understanding this would be to start off with some description, some understanding, what is the great fear in the world today? I think that great fear is a fear of starvation. I don't mean the fear of just being hungry today. I'm talking about fear of actual starvation. When we talk about a third of the world's population today making it on a dollar a day and being destitute, don't have adequate clothing, not adequate shelter, not adequate food, not adequate anything. We're talking about a situation that endangers a great fear, that fear of the inability to feed the children or to start them off in life properly. So we see that as wealth and poverty polarize throughout the world, there's a consolidation of fear and hatred that goes right along with it. Now, I think we just have to state that rightly or wrongly, the most feared and consequently the most hated power on earth is the United States. And we've seen in the past, and we'll see again in the future, that each stage of impoverishment of the peoples of the earth bring about an escalation of this fear and hatred to the level of violence. It comes in waves. We've seen it before, and we're in the middle of it, seeing it again, I believe. Now, you know, you're getting back to the tragedy of September the 11th, that the government would very much like to treat this tragedy as some isolated incident that's committed by some insane terrorist. I think that sensible people understand that there's a logic to history that's called the law of cause and effect. First comes a situation that gives rise to a cause. Then there is an incident or an event that triggers an effect. So to understand September the 11th, we have to go back to the situation that's been developed around the struggle for the control of the world's oil. This struggle includes the destruction of the Palestinian society, the reduction of their people to dependence on the United Nations for food, and it includes the daily aggression of the Israeli state against them. It also includes the placing of, in quotes, Christian soldiers in the holiest of Islamic areas. And that, I think, is the situation that gave rise to an incident. It wasn't just something, an isolated incident, no more than the assassination of the Archduke Ferdinand, started World War I. No, that was an incident that triggered it, but it was a situation that caused it. So when we look back at this question of cause, we're seeing that it's a deepening impoverishment of the huge sections of the people of the earth that creates an imperative to strike back. And the events of September the 11th are one link in a chain of incidents and causes and effects that it seems to me that the government is intent now of adding another link. And so then somebody else will add another link until this thing finally reaches some kind of a violent conclusion, really violent conclusion. I'm not talking about one incident. I'm talking about a whole strata of violence that erupts in the form of international war.
Nelson, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the development of poverty today in the world and how that relates to the issue of race and racism.
Well, apart from the role of the new means of production, that is to say the robotics and downsizing and so forth, I want to look at the political aspects of it for just a moment. See, the reality of it is that racism isn't something that exists by itself. Racism has a face to it, and that face is exploitation. Racism facilitates this, right? Facilitates exploitation, and facilitates the conquest of weaker peoples and so forth. If we look at the world today, the first thing that we're struck with and can't avoid is that you have the Northern Hemisphere that is white, that is industrialized, that is militarily powerful, and they have conquered the Southern Hemisphere, which in the main is colored, which is economically backward, and the shield for all this, the excuse for all of this, is racism. But you cannot extract racism away from the poverty, the conquest, and the exploitation. So racism isn't a thing that's a category that we can talk about independently of world history and the growing poverty throughout the world. That when we speak of poverty, we are not speaking of New York City, right? We're not speaking of Seattle, Washington, or not speaking of Toronto, Canada, right? We're speaking of Mexico, we're speaking of Santo Domingo, we're speaking of Africa, we're speaking of South Asia. So these things are real. Politics and economics are tightly combined, and the politics of racism is exploitation, conquest.
Brooke, I'd like to ask you now if you could comment on the recent World Conference Against Racism that was held in Durban, South Africa.
The Durban Conference was extremely significant. It gave a world platform to the peoples of the world to debate and discuss all forms of hatred. Racism obviously was one of those, but also questions of xenophobia, which is the fear of foreigners, and as the title of the conference said, all forms of intolerance. And even though the title of the conference and the debate took the form of a discussion of racism, it also, the other part of the significance of the Durban Conference is that it brought to the world a debate around world poverty and what are we going to do about it. And it was interesting to read the final UN statement. The whole thing hasn't been issued as of this moment, but the final UN statement at the end of the meeting identified a number of issues which needed to be addressed. And it was interesting to see in that list of issues a kind of growing conflict around what is the resolution to world poverty. And on the one hand, you had a number of issues that were identified, which essentially assisted in expanding and consolidating the global economy. You had issues such as the access to markets and the promotion of foreign investment and the stepping up of debt relief, which is essentially relief to the banks and the financial institutions that have loaned out millions and millions of dollars. And then on the other hand, you had items that were the reflection of people trying to get directly their hands directly on the immediate relief of the immediate suffering of the poor, things like health care, education, cultural development, and the end of human slavery. And this conflict that was in the final statement was also kind of mirrored in the events prior to the South African conference there in South Africa itself. I think many people know that there were a series of demonstrations and protests primarily by black South African mass organizations and trade unions against the neoliberal policies of the South African government. And on the other hand, the emergence of there in South Africa of a class of white and black poor, where working class whites are living in squatters camps alongside blacks. And blacks, now that apartheid has been destroyed and lifted, can move around but can't find work. And it's interesting that more and more people are recognizing this phenomenon, and the Sri Lankan author A. Sivanandan has called this phenomenon poverty is the new black. And I think this is a recognition of a very significantly changing situation. So we can see that we can't address this poverty that we've been talking about simply by addressing racism, even though racism is a crucial aspect of this problem, because this isn't the state of the world today. We have the wherewithal to solve this problem of poverty. There isn't a magazine or a newspaper or a television article today that doesn't seem to be talking about the wonders of technology and how it can solve our healthcare problems, our housing problems, our problems over feeding people and so forth. The main thing we need to be looking at is reorganizing society so that everyone can benefit from the wonders of this new technology.
Yeah, I think those comments are very useful and helpful to understand the recent conference, because there was so little that really came out in our newspapers that really explain to the American people why it was so important. I think the thing that in America that we heard so much about was reparations, and I wondered if perhaps, Nelson, you could say a few things about the issue of reparations.
The dictionary defines reparations as making of amends for wrongs or injuries. Now, the African-American demand for reparations is part of a worldwide struggle for justice. It's not something that exists independent of itself. The Durban Conference has quite correctly characterized slavery and the slave trade as a crime against humanity. So the question of reparations is in that context. It's in around the question of wrongs and injuries, and the compelling of the American government and the corporations that profited from slavery to pay for it. Now, I think it's important to look back and see that there's precedent for what we're talking about. The Civil War government in this country agreed to give the head of every slave household 40 acres and a mule as reparations for slavery. So we're not talking about something that's new in American history. The government never carried through. Maybe one-tenth or one-hundredth of the ex-slaves received that 40 acres and the mule. And so what we're talking about is for the government to come through on an issue that has already been decided, right? This promise was made some 135 years ago, and it seems to the African American people that it's time for the government to come through and complete this process. Now, I want to say, on the other hand, that we do not view reparations as a solution to the so-called race problem in this country. That we do utilize the struggle for reparations to illuminate the basic questions that concern not only the African Americans, but the whole of the poor of this country. Because there's no way today to extract the African American poor out of this growing mass of American poor and think that we're going to settle the question by reparations. Reparations is just, you know, part of the historical retribution that it need be made in order to wipe the slate clean. But in no way do we look upon this as settling the question. That question is this system fit to live with? I mean, is it possible a system that created, or I should say was created from the slave trade and created from slavery, and that this system that is a system of war and exploitation that has gone on for the last couple hundred years, is it possible that for us to continue to live within this system, getting worse and worse? There's more slavery today than there's ever been in human history. Some 52 million people today are slaves in the world, much greater number than ever before in history. So we bring to the front the whole question of an exploiting system and how to create the conditions that will bar forever the continuation of the exploitation of one person by another. That condition, of course, is the abolition of private property and the development of a cooperative society where the slogans of each for all for each and all these wonderful slogans will at last finally have some kind of a meaning for the peoples of the earth.
We're interviewing Brooke Hagerty and Nelson Peary, co-authors of the book Moving Onward, From Racial Division to Class Unity. We're talking about what is going on in the world today and the ideas of racism and the vision of the new world. Brooke, I wondered if you could talk a little more about this vision of the new world and how we can end racism today.
Well, we're not going to be able to end racism or any other social ill, for that matter, without changing the conditions that give rise to it. Just as Nelson was saying before, we can see from history that the idea of race or the ideology of race really arose as part of the capitalist system and helped to sustain it. It ensured economic exploitation that guaranteed profits and the political oppression that has allowed for those profits to be guaranteed. We have to be against racism, there's no doubt about that, but being against something isn't enough. We have to be for something. We need to replace these old ideas that have supported this rotten system for so long with new ideas that support the vision of a new society where all can be provided for. So what are these new ideas? The basis of this new society is already developing. Technology is giving us the wherewithal to provide for everyone, and we have the means to achieve it. The developing new class of poor who cannot live in this society, needs to be reorganized around their needs. And their common economic plight makes it possible for them to unify and organize to achieve this reorganization. The only thing that's missing is a vision and an understanding of what the world can truly be. A peaceful, stable, cooperative society where all can share in everything that society has to offer. Humanity has long dreamed of this kind of a world, but only today is it possible. This is the vision that we put forward in the book, and this is the vision that the League of Revolutionaries for a New America is bringing to the American people.
Nelson, I wanted to ask you one last question. Could you tell our listeners your opinion of what the United States is trying to achieve with this effort toward war today?
Well, first of all, I think we have to realize that terror, individual terror that's going on around the world, is a weapon of people who are defenseless. And so, and I think that Bush was right when he talked about that we're heading into a new kind of war. See, I don't think there's any question about that. I think that the world has reached a certain point to where there is bound to be some kind of resistance from various groupings that claim to represent this ideology or that ideology or that group of people or that so forth, that there's bound to be greater and greater resistance. Now, as long as there's no possibility of organized armies fighting out this battle, small groups of individuals are going to fight it out with the only weapons they have. I mean, it takes a considerable amount of, I hardly know how to say this, but it takes a person who has no hope in life to strap dynamite on themselves and blow themselves up as the only, you know, only way of fighting against what they consider just an unbearable aggression. So we're not talking about fighting against an organized army. We're talking about a war against a huge section of the peoples of the earth. So the first thing, as in any war, that the United States cannot allow the world to have the opinion that we are defenseless, that they have to strike back. Now, then, the problem of it is, of course, are they going to strike back in such a way that will further isolate the United States in this respect? You got this cowboy in there who's putting up posters, you know, wanted, dead or alive. I mean, this thing don't fly in England. It doesn't fly in Germany. It doesn't fly in France. It doesn't fly in Spain. And certainly doesn't fly in the Southern Hemisphere. This idea of somebody who's been indicted by the United States without proof, without a trial, and so forth, but is now wanted dead or alive. I mean, it's not, it won't work. So what the United States is after is to, at this point, to try to stabilize its position. Now, at the same time, you know, as we talked about, the causes and effects, the United States has set up a condition to where practically every government in the so-called third world is a government that's been imposed upon the people in one way or another, even if it has certain legal trappings. So what we see then is that at the time of crisis, these governments, so-called governments, have got to come to the assistance of the United States against the will of the majority of the people. I don't think the majority of the people of the world want terrorism, but they want to get the United States off their back. They want the United States, for example, to get out of the holy lands of Islam. They want the United States to stop the exploitation. They want the United States to stop upholding the slavery and so forth. They have no other way to fight back except the way that they're fighting back. So this posturing of the United States, I mean, putting B-52s in the air to fly from the United States to fly over Pakistan, I mean, the trip itself, if they use that money to alleviate the poverty of the world, they would be going in the direction of resolving this problem. But what they're going to do is use a B-52 that cost, what, $4 billion or something, to drop another $1 million worth of bombs on two or three impoverished peoples and call that some kind of a victory. But this is posturing, that if they want to solve the problem, if they want to win this war, they are going to have to take steps towards the elimination of this grinding poverty that's just killing the peoples of the earth. If they don't do this, that war cannot be won.
And I think that's why this movement of peoples throughout the world to fight against poverty and to create this new world is so important. I think this growing peace movement is important in that respect, too.
I think the peace movement is important. I think, though, the peace movement has to come up with more of a program than peace. I mean, peace is not an abstraction, right? Peace is food, peace is shelter, peace is education. If I could just give an example of what I mean, that the state in the United States with the lowest crime rate and the lowest poverty rate is the state of Minnesota. Incidentally, it has the highest educational rate in the nation. So if we can't see that you know, drug use, terror, hatred, all this kind of stuff is on one side that we call poverty. On the other side, we have education, we have good schools, we have decent homes, and these things are the antidote for the other. But you cannot crush peoples who have made up their mind that they're going to have to fight for their future. You cannot crush them with military might. The only thing that you can do is to agree with them that the world is getting, the majority of the people of the world are getting poorer and poorer, more and more oppressed. Practically every movement in the world today, every popular movement in the world today, just about, is absolutely fascist. I mean, all of these traditional movements, say, in the Middle East today, all of them are fascist. They're anti-government, but they're fascist. Who represents the people? Nothing. For the first time in history that I know of, certainly for the first time in my lifetime, you have nothing to represent the people. The only opposition to these rotten governments are fascist movements. It's a very serious thing. Very, very delicate, very serious situation that we face in the world today.
Thanks to both Nelson Peary and Brooke Hagerty for being our guests on People's Tribune Radio. Hagerty and Peary are the co-authors of Moving Onward, From Racial Division to Class Unity. You're listening to People's Tribune Radio. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. We'd like to let you know about a special League event that's coming up in Chicago in November.
People's Tribune Radio is proud to announce the 4th annual People's Tribune Tribuno del Pueblo benefit in Chicago. This year's featured speaker will be Michael War, acclaimed Chicago poet, arts administrator, and consultant. War's experience spans more than 15 years of grassroots arts organizing. He will discuss arts and culture today, new forces, and new visions. Join friends and contributors on Saturday, November 3rd, 2001, to honor the People's Tribune, the Tribuno del Pueblo, and to raise money to continue their revolutionary work. Tickets are $15, which includes a buffet dinner. Group discounts available. For tickets and information, call 773-202-7012.
The following is an editorial from the League of Revolutionaries for a New America on September 11th's terrorist attacks. Our hearts go out to those who lost loved ones in the tragic events of September 11th. Every one of those killed was someone's mother or father or son or daughter. We condemn this attack and we condemn all forms of terrorism. The slaughter of American workers contributes nothing to the resolution of the terrible problems faced by the poor of the world. Across the country, people are struggling with their grief and an understandable desire by many for revenge. The Bush administration is taking advantage of this to try to rally people to support what it calls a war against terrorism. Already, the Congress has passed legislation to give the president broad power to wage war and is moving to pass legislation that would sharply curtail our civil liberties. But the real interest of the American people will not be served by war or by surrendering democracy. War will not win justice for those who died. It will only invite more violence. It will not replace the 1 million jobs that have been lost in America this year. It will not ease the suffering of the poor in our country, provide health care or education or housing. Indeed, it will take resources away. Today, our destiny is dictated by a handful of billionaires who own and control the global economy. They decide who will live or die, who will be free or who will live as a slave, who will face peace or war. Their goal is to turn the whole world into a single unified market where they invest wherever it will turn the greatest profit. The interests of the majority of Americans lie with the poor, not only of America, but of the whole world. This is because the poor, whether in New York City or in Gaza, are forced to fight for a new kind of society, a cooperative society that provides for every member's well-being. We can build such a world because technology has given us the abundance to do so. We can reach out to the world in peace and use our resources to help end poverty everywhere, forever. But we have to step forward and take control of our country's destiny. It's up to us. That's it for this edition of People's Tribune Radio. People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. The League advocates for a cooperative society where the same technologies that are being used to displace millions of workers across the globe are used for the benefit of humanity as a whole. If you'd like more information about the League, our Speakers Bureau, or our print and audio publications, you can contact us at 1-800-691-6888. That number once again, 1-800-691-6888. My name is Mike Thornton. It's been my pleasure to be your host for this edition of People's Tribune Radio.